ACCA, the world's most forward-thinking professional accountancy body.
Hello and welcome to a series of podcasts brought to you by Accounting and Business Magazine. In this series, we'll be exploring current trends affecting the profession and how the professional accountant can respond to these changes. We speak to experts, including ACCA members from a range of fields, to bring different perspectives and practical advice.
Hello, I'm Monique McKenzie, Global PR Officer at ACCA. Today we're talking to Carl Reeder, Chair of ACCA's Practitioners Panel and author of Small Business Guide, Boss It.
Hey Monique, thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with the big picture first of all. What are some of the biggest challenges facing practitioners today?
Wow. So at the time of recording, just after in the midst of the third wave of the coronavirus pandemic in the UK here, it's been, I guess, a very uncertain time and has highlighted a number of the changes that are staring us in the face. Certainly domestically in the UK, we're seeing initiatives like Making Tax Digital, which is just part of an overall global movement towards digitalization of financial affairs. So clearly one of the massive risks is tech and automation, and I guess the question of what opportunities that brings for accountants in practice, but also the risks that it brings for accountants in practice. So that's one of them. The other thing, I believe, is the changing nature of the role of the accountant and the expectation that clients, businesses, and indeed other stakeholders have of accountants.
So how can practitioners themselves convince their clients that they are advisors, and how can they develop those skills themselves?
So to answer your first question, there's only one way, and that's to do it. But I appreciate that really doesn't help anybody listening. So allow me to go into a little bit more detail about exactly how accountants can persuade their clients, but also how can they deliver, how can they get upskilled. The challenge with advisory is that really there's a few different levels of advisory, and accountants sometimes underestimate or overestimate the amount of advisory that they actually do. So there's a marketing veneer around advisory, but underneath that, you've got some amazing advisors who still promote themselves as producing tax returns and producing accounts. So yeah, they're clearly in a position of risk because they're invaluable to their clients. They've had world-class training, they know what they're doing, they've had years of experience, but they don't necessarily present it in the right way, so those services aren't necessarily utilised. Secondly, you've got those who claim they offer advisory, but actually do the stuff that could potentially be automated. You know, things like number crunching, bean counting, you know, the things that might stereotypically have been attached with the accounting profession 10, 20, 30 years ago. So there is multiple layers to what is advisory and how is it delivered. Ultimately for me, and everybody has their own definition, I believe advisory is just simply about helping your clients get from where they are today to where they want to be by using the numbers and the data as a platform for that advice. Because accountants have some terrific skills that they've learned along the way. And some of those are actually inbuilt within an accountant's typical personality. We're all different, but there's some typical personality drivers that I've seen within accountants. Things like on the DISC profile being high stability, high compliance, you know, and also an analytical mindset, a need to appreciate the detail. Those things really help the advisory cause. And if you add to that the level of data that an accountant's got, it's actually a really powerful place to be in to be able to offer advisory.
So are lots of people doing this? Like, are those who are getting it right going to succeed and those who don't will fail?
I don't think it's as simple as that, Monique. I think that, so there are people doing it, and there are some saying they're doing it, but not doing it. There are some saying they're doing it and are doing it. And likewise, there are some who are not saying it at all, but they're doing it really well. So it is happening out there. I think when it comes down to the question that you've asked as to whether it's a matter of life or death in terms of business, I don't believe it is, but I believe that it's just one of the differentiators that a practice can use to help them stand out. I think there is a very big risk for average practitioners that there's a diversification coming between, you know, let's say the top 10, top 20, top 50, top 100, however we categorize it, the big firms and the smaller firms. The smaller firms are able to be nimble, they're able to adopt tech, they're able to niche their practice effectively, which has been really successful in our practice, and they're ultimately able to become a boutique practice. The big firms are able to be multidisciplinary and offer a wider range of services, things like insolvency, corporate finance, transactional services, all of the kind of stuff that's out of the reach of the much smaller practices. But then there's the uncomfortable gap in the middle that are too big to be nimble and boutique. They're too established to be able to adapt quickly, but they're too small to compete with the very big firms who are able to add additional services very quickly and have the skill sets internally.
So do we just wave goodbye to compliance-based work as those clients buy the software themselves and entirely focus on value add potential maybe?
Not at all. So I believe there's still a place for compliance, and I know that's not a popular view. If you were to look on the social media bubbles around accountancy, you will hear people saying compliance is dead, recurring fees are going to die. I don't believe that at all. I believe there's still a place for compliance. And what we need to look at is that clients make their buying decisions based on a number of different factors. You know, some of them will go for the cheapest possible option. And for those, compliance might be dead because they might perceive compliance as a commodity. They might perceive it as something that software can deliver for them. They might see it as something that they just cannot do. So there is that part of the compliance market, which, yes, probably could be automated and would erode. Now, that is a big risk because arguably that could potentially be, you know, 5 million self-employed people who don't have employees. So there is a big, I don't want to understate the risk of that, but that's only part of a market. There's then slightly bigger businesses, but they might have different values. Some of them might value sleeping at night and the reassurance that the compliance is all in order and would really appreciate somebody else doing it for them. Some people, crazily enough, would value things like prestige. You know, we've seen some of the top four firms come into the small business space and people buy their services just so that they can submit a set of accounts to their bank or to their suppliers that have a Big Four accounting name on there. So there's a number of different buying decisions, and the buying decision process will dictate whether compliance will die for that particular client. But on the whole, I think the market will get smaller, but it certainly won't die.
So coming back to the profession, is it attracting different types of people given these changes? Or would you say the profession is more attractive now than it was before?
So that's a really good question, Monique. I think the profession is definitely more attractive, but I think we've all got our part to play to help encourage that change. Because not only is the technical side of a profession changing insofar as what we do, how we do it, how we deliver it, the technology that we use, the level of work that we do for clients, etc. So not only is all of that stuff changing, but also the skill sets needed and the personality types needed to deal with the different types of conversations that we're having today, that's a change as well. And whilst it's changing, it's actually a very exciting time to be on board in the profession. I would say there's also a challenge in the profession as a whole, and I'm not pinning this down to any one practice or association or individual or any of that. Yeah, we need to disregard it. We're talking about the landscape as a whole here. We need to change the way that we approach the outside market to be seen as more dynamic and demonstrate that actually accountancy isn't just about being sat in a dark room with no windows adding up numbers on a calculator anymore. There's actually so much more to accountancy nowadays. The traditional accountancy stuff is done by the machines, and it's actually the stuff that comes afterwards, the advice, the relationships, getting to know the business owners, and that's really exciting, and it can prove to be an amazing foundation for anyone who wants a career in business, whether specifically in accountancy or outside of accountancy. It's a wonderful grounding. And I think we all, as an entire bigger picture of accountancy, need to promote that message.
So what about purpose over value? Do practitioners see that they can play a role at encouraging ethical motivation in their clients? So such as like advising about sustainability, ethical growth?
Do you know what? I would love to answer yes. But Monique, if I was to answer honestly with what I see, rather than idealistically, I don't see it at all. I see some practitioners, and you know, I've seen some examples of accountants focusing on vegan businesses, for example. Mm-hmm. So I've noticed a trend towards that, and I think one of the really strong things that's come about recently is that practices aren't afraid to highlight what differentiates them. So a practice is no longer a boilerplate with the surname of the partners above the door in gold plate writing. You know, there's no longer an identikit approach to presenting and promoting a practice anymore. However, I wouldn't say that advice around sustainability and purpose is central to most firms. Sometimes it's a tick box exercise for promotional purposes, but I've not seen many instances of it being truly embedded within practices, which is unfortunate.
It is, it really is. Well, we're just out of time, so I just want to thank you again, Carl, so much for participating today. I should point out that Carl has done a web series of videos for AB, which you can find by searching Carl Reader ACCA on YouTube. Thank you again, Carl.
Monique, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
And we hope you found this podcast useful.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If so, please like, subscribe and share it with colleagues who might also find it useful. For more insights from Accounting and Business Magazine, visit abmagazine.accaglobal.com.
This podcast was brought to you by ACCA. Find out how we think ahead at accaglobal.com.